Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:07 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 10th, and the yield curve spread continues to expand. It's up to 77 basis points. Well, I think it's important to look at the long-term chart, or at least at the last decade, because generally speaking, when you get an inversion, then it does tend to trend all the way back up towards 250 basis points. And that is substantially wider than we have right now. It's also worth considering that the yield curve becomes inverted generally before a recession. And then it steepens because the Federal Reserve tends to intervene to cut interest rates aggressively after they have evidence that the economy is in fact contracting. On this occasion, it's somewhat different because they have preempted, and or at least they were extremely timely in terms of cutting interest rates very aggressively, very quickly, and that has helped to ensure the stock market rebounded very quickly. But the big question then is, usually they cut interest rates, and then you get this big divergence between the long end and the short end of the curve. And it's usually because they cut short-term interest rates so aggressively that there's a big divergence between the short and the long end. On this occasion, they didn't have the same kind of room to cut, so there's been this massive increase in money supply. One of the reasons we tend to get this big expansion in the yield curve is also because of risk appetites. So you do get this compression in yields, but also that there's less demand for bonds as people start to fish around for potential recovery candidates. And we've certainly had a lot of that go on in the last 6 months. But then we have the additional consideration that what happens in terms of the quantity of debt that's been created. Because the 10-year yield is rising, and it pushed all the way up towards the 1% level in here today. It's now closing at a higher level than we've seen since March, and 1% is a bit of a big psychological level here. The yield has now demonstrated support in the region of the trend mean, and investors are asking logical questions. If we are going to have a vaccine, then the potential is the economy is going to bounce back. If the economy is going to bounce back, then velocity of money will pick up. And velocity of money is one of the most important aspects of any kind of monetary environment. It did pick up modestly when it was last updated at the end of September, but not in a very big way. And of course, that is because of the continued lockdowns and social distancing and the large number of unemployed people. But within the next 6 months, we'll probably be done with social distancing. We're not quite there yet. I was expecting to fly, for example, to Denver on Friday, and just got an email before I started recording that the fencing tournament that my daughters were entered in has been cancelled. It's not exactly great news, but the reality is that we are still in an environment where people are worried about infection, and it is affecting consumer behavior, because obviously now we're going to make some phone calls to see if we can cancel our reservations and our flights, and then subject to that make a decision on whether we will in fact travel. And of course, that represents, you know, thousands of dollars in terms of spending that will or will not occur. And then you multiply that across the entire country, and there are obvious ramifications of lockdowns. But when we get to the end of social distancing, and it could easily happen by the end of the first quarter, well, all of that spending comes back, and there's a lot of spending that's pent up as well, and it means that the velocity of money will pop straight back up again, at least come back up towards where it was at the beginning of 2020. And that, of course, is when this massive expansion in money supply will start to come into focus, because it's gone up by 3.3 trillion in the space of the last 6 months, and it is still rising. So this is obviously a very significant amount of additional money that's been poured into the market, but it did not have an inflationary impact because of that decline in the velocity of money. Now, it would be very tempting to think that we're going to continue to see a large number of these companies that captured market share as a result of the lockdowns hold on to that market share. It might be Pollyanna-ish thinking. The Nasdaq stopped going up in September. Bond yields started rising in October, and the index had a downside key reversal yesterday and followed through on the downside in here today. I'm not so much worried about companies like Apple or Google or Facebook because they've got earnings, and even then they have stopped going up, and Apple has got two lower highs now. But then when we think about companies like Beyond Meat, well, not only do they have a great deal of debt and no earnings to speak of, but they're very interest rate reliant. If they haven't been able to make money out of the pandemic, then nobody has. That's equally true of companies like Shopify. Their entire business model is trying to compete against Amazon. That is a tall order at the best of times. But again, they did spectacularly well during the teeth of the crisis, but the share peaked with a very large downside key reversal in September. We have a lower high now, and it is back testing the lower side of the range. This is a potential top formation in development. And the number of these companies that are trading at rather extraordinary valuations and are losing momentum is rather high. They've basically had this, what could amount to a one-shot period of growth. And now the question is whether they're going to be able to sustain that growth. I think another company that is very susceptible to additional downside is Peloton. The share is trading on a PE of 269 for 2021. They've just signed a deal with Beyonce, but what they are also doing is trying to enforce patents that seem to be rather extraordinary claims. And they're using shareholders' money to settle out of court with any company that tries to come up with a competing product. And that is not a sustainable business model. The reality is they're trying to enforce these patents saying that they own the rights to online league tables of performance. Unfortunately, the reality is that computer games have had online league tables updating in real time for players for what feels like decades. So to say that Peloton invented it seems to be a very big stretch, but they continue to spend shareholder money on trying to enforce these patents, and people have been willing to give it to them. But the reality is that these types of fad-based cardio workouts do tend to come and go, and they're selling exercise equipment that costs $1,500, which is fine when people are cooped up at home, but it's very unlikely to really persist when people end social distancing. These types of extremely interest rate sensitive companies are really going to have a very difficult time when social distancing eventually ends, and it suggests that companies like Zoom Media, for example, are unlikely to survive. Then, of course, there are others like Netflix, which has been running a very capital-intensive business model for a prolonged period of time. Now, the big question is whether they can achieve profitability. They have perhaps been able to get over the hurdle and get to a point where they may have some profits at some point in the future, but it all hinges on potential demand from India. Now, when we then think about, well, What is likely? Well, there are going to be concerns in the bond market about the sustainability of government bond debt and the subsequent, and of course, how good the growth rate is likely to be is obviously going to be a very significant factor in that calculation. Gold prices continue to hold the lower side of the range. It was a very large downward dynamic yesterday, and it has at least steadied in here today, but this kind of steadying is in no way compensatory for the size of the downward dynamic that we had yesterday. It's certainly going to have to do more in order to confirm that we're back in a demand dominated environment. And then silver was also in positive territory today, and it has held this very short-term sequence of higher reaction lows since the end of October, but it also has more to do in here. Elsewhere in the commodity sector, soybeans is surging higher, and it continues to extend the break above the 1,000 cent level, and it's closing in on 1,200. But it's looking increasingly likely that the wider commodity sector is in the process of completing base formations. Wheat has had this rounding characteristic for 5 years, and it's now steadying around the $6 level. And then corn has also got base formation, potentially completion characteristics. Every time it has got up towards $450 in the last 5 years, it has failed. So the ability to hold that $4 area is going to be the make or break in terms of the ability to hold the demand-dominated environment. Lumber prices came right back to the region of the trend mean and have rebounded. And as long as that $500 level is holding, we can give the benefit of the doubt to continued upside. I think it's important too to pay attention to some of these long-term charts, because when we look at, for example, the outlook for lumber, it spent an incredibly long time ranging below 400. It popped briefly above it in 2018, came back to 300, but has since then held the move above $400, and this continues to look like a recovery scenario overall and a step change in the marginal cost of production. If we then think about the industrial resources, well, copper, for example, has been steadying around the $3 area. It was also around this level in 2017 and 18, but the much bigger point here is that it is not declining. And when we then think about the wider industrial resources sector, it continues to improve from here, and it has clearly broken the downward bias from the peak in 2018. The continuous commodity index has been steadying around the 400 level, and it is now testing the upper side of its range. There is the clear potential that commodities are on the cusp of starting to outperform once more. And I think that does get to the crux of the argument that on one side, we have extremely highly valued speculative companies that have got a lot of interest rate sensitivity and are 100% dependent on access to that wall of liquidity that has sustained their businesses. I think Sunrun's a very good example of that. It did phenomenally well in the period during the lockdowns because of low interest rates and abundant credit. But since interest rates started to rise, and even though the rise has been modest, then the share has done nothing but pull back as a result. That is just a very good example of how interest rate sensitive the sector is. But then when we think about the more beaten down sectors, those that are very much tied to the global economy, airlines being a clear example. Well, they have now started to demonstrate support in the region of the trend mean. It doesn't mean that we're going straight back up to the peaks back in 2018 and 19, but they are at least steadying here, and they're very tied to global economic growth. One way or another, we're likely to see a clear determination by governments all over the world to try and get reflation going in 2021. They need to get as many people back to work as possible and reanimate the global economy. It means that they're going to be reluctant to raise interest rates, and there's going to have to be additional stimulative action from central banks in order to ensure the recovery takes hold. And that does suggest that as we get up towards the 1% level on 10-year yields, the Federal Reserve will start to come under pressure to act. Then when we think about the yield curve spread in Australia, it's really quite similar. We've had a significant pop on the upside in March, and it is coming right back to test the upper side of that base as well. The commonality that we see in government bonds all over the world is really quite impressive. And it's not just the pop in treasuries, but gilts, for example, are now at new recovery highs as well. Much of the German curve is still inverted, but the total number of bonds with negative yields has contracted by about $1 trillion over the course of the last 2 weeks, and the Bund yield has rallied rather impressively this week and is now testing its sequence of lower rally highs. I think there is clear scope here that we're going to see higher interest rates overall, and that there will be a clear determination by investors to test the resolve of central banks in avoiding yield curve control, because it just seems to be inevitable that they're going to have to try and stop yields from rising. There is just no way that governments can tolerate that increase in the cost of servicing the debt, not least when they are still trying to stimulate. Now, we're also now starting to see some of the comeuppance that particularly the USA is going to experience as a result of stimulating during a late-stage economic expansion, because now they're going to have to stimulate even more in order to get the expansion back on track. It's just normal that we would anticipate that interest rates would rise in response to that massive increase in the quantity of debt, particularly if velocity of money starts to pick back up again. And if they are going to stop doing that, stop that from happening, then the dollar is going to take some of the burden for that, if not all of it. And following the pop on the upside we had yesterday for the dollar index, it did not follow through on the upside in here today. The one currency that has been appreciating steadily is the renminbi, and it didn't follow through on the strength yesterday's weakness. And now the question really is whether the Chinese will intervene to try and devalue their currency. The Japanese look like they're rather happy with the significant devaluation of their currency versus the dollar yesterday. And the Nikkei index is extending its advance up and through that 24,000 point level. And it looks like a break up and out of what is effectively a 3-year first step above the almost 30-year base formation. But when we look around the rest of Asia, the willingness of China to allow the currency to appreciate, well, that's really rather significant, because when we look at China's imports from ASEAN, they've been rising steadily over the course of the last few years, up from about 12 to approximately 15% of overall imports. Well, that also suggests that as long as China is willing to allow their currency to appreciate, it means that lots of other regional currencies in Asia can also allow theirs to appreciate, because it is the cross rate with the renminbi is more important to them than just about anything else. The Asia dollar index has clearly broken its downtrend. Now, it is overbought in the short term. There is clear scope that it may consolidate, but this looks like a clear break of trend, and we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside as long as that remains the case. When we think about the Latin America dollar index, it did nothing but fall for 10 years. And we are right now in the region of the trend mean. A break above it and up out of this range that's persisted for the last 6 months would be really quite catalytic in terms of interest for the region, but also for commodities more generally. So the big picture here is that we have got this question about interest rates. There are significant portions of the US and European markets that are extremely interest rate sensitive. There are others that are likely to benefit from global reflation. And most particularly, the emerging markets will benefit if the dollar takes the pressure from the clear determination to try and hold yields down. So emerging markets are probably in a more favorable position today than they have been since at least 2012. And against all of that, we've got the rise of commodity prices and the continued strength of gold, because the only way that governments are going to get out of this crisis, which is in large part self-imposed, is to devalue the purchasing power of their currencies. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.